All right, if you have your Bible with you today, I'm going to ask you to open up to the book of Ecclesiastes. That's in the Old Testament. We are beginning a new series today entitled, What's the Point? What's the Point? We'll be going through the book of Ecclesiastes, almost verse by verse, not exactly verse by verse, but virtually verse by verse over these next few weeks. Many of you know that last year I turned 50 years old. It was a milestone birthday for me. In the years leading up to that, and even now, I felt like God was beginning to impress upon me the importance of looking at time, valuing time, critiquing time, challenging my perspective of time, and making me appreciate time in a much more meaningful way. Of all the God-given commodities that God blesses us with, there's no greater valuable commodity than that of time. There's no material possession more valuable than time. There's no pursuit, hobby, interest, even calling that is more valuable than time. Relationships are not more valuable than time. Why would I challenge that idea? Why would I put forth that idea? Because the how and what that I do with my time affects all those other areas. It affects the quality, it affects the health, and the thriving of all those other areas are directly related to what I do with my time. When we as human beings look at our lives and examine ourselves and we ask ourselves, and I've been doing this, like I said, more and more these last few years, whenever I devote a chunk of my time to something or I put my life into a project or a pursuit, I ask myself these questions. What am I doing? And what is the point of this? I want to make sure that what I'm doing is valuable. I want to make sure that what I'm doing has worth, has purpose, is drawing me closer to God and not further from God. And I find myself asking that question, what am I doing? What is the point of this? Whenever we ask ourselves those existential questions of what is my purpose here? What is the point of this? What is it that I'm doing? What we are doing ourselves is we are connecting as human beings who are bound by time, who have finite minds. We are, as human beings, connecting a finite being bound by time and space. We are connecting with an infinite God who's not bound by time or space. So if you've ever pondered that question, what's the point of all this? What am I doing? What does this all mean? What you're really doing is longing for God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, we'll get to this scripture later in the series, but I want to mention it here because it says this. It says, God has made everything beautiful for its own time, and God has planted eternity into the human heart. God has placed this idea of eternity, our relationship, our dynamic with time is planted within us by God, and it gives us the ability to connect with God on an eternal perspective. So when we ask the questions, what is the point, and we ponder our existence and eternity, God has given us that ability to connect with Him, to question, and to understand Him. The whole big series of this idea is that we have a sense of eternity in our lives. We possess this God-given knowledge that there's something more to life. There's more. There's got to be something more than just what we could see, taste, hear, smell, touch, the here and now. There's something more to that. And those questions that we ask, like what's the point, those are divinely inspired questions, and we will seek the answers to those questions through the Word of God as we go through the series in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is an Old Testament wisdom book. It's not the genre of poetry. It's not the genre of a historical text. It's not the genre of a narrative text. It's an Old Testament wisdom book, and where Proverbs and Psalms generally grab the spotlight of the Old Testament wisdom books, Ecclesiastes is sometimes put on the back burner, but it really shouldn't be that way. Because through the book of Ecclesiastes, we see one person's viewpoint, one person's observation of life through their experiences. I don't know if you've ever read the book of Ecclesiastes. If you read it, some people would say, this book's kind of weird. It's a little dark, pessimistic. Sounds like this writer is venting. this is the kind of book that if you were to read it and the author was alive today, you would probably want to send them an email and say, hey, you okay? You doing all right? You need a hug? The words in the book of Ecclesiastes don't always sound like words that you would think would be found in the Bible. This British theologian and author, John Goldingay, he says this. He says, the questions in Ecclesiastes are not the questions of an atheist, even though they could sound like they are. They're not the questions of an agnostic. They are the questions of a believer who wants to keep faith honest. And that's the encouragement of the book of Ecclesiastes, that the issues and the doubts and the wonderings that the narrator has in the book of Ecclesiastes are the same ones that we as believers who are authentically trying to have a relationship with God ask ourselves every single day. And it connects with our daily experiences in a raw, deep, practical way as well. So let's begin reading here. We're just going to go into the first 11 verses of chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. And today's message is more an overview, kind of an introduction to the series. But I've entitled this message today, Chasing Vapor. Chasing Vapor. We'll be reading the first 11 verses of Ecclesiastes. Verse 1 begins like this. It says, these are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher, completely meaningless. I told you, you want to just give this teacher a hug. Say, are you okay? Verse 3, what do people get for all of their hard work under the sun? Not a very subtle beginning here to the book of Ecclesiastes. These first three verses kind of set the stage for the whole rest of the text. Verse number one identifies the narrator. Who is the narrator? Who is the person who is given credit for writing the book of Ecclesiastes? And it's King Solomon, the son of King David, who built the temple. And that's important because he is giving, again, his perspective, his observation on what life is. And the more you know about King Solomon is that he was very successful. He had a lot of power. He had fame. He had a unique position as the ruler of the kingdom to kind of see life through a different lens. Someone who really had everything at his disposal. He had power, relationships, money, wealth, fame, glory. And he sits back, he looks at all of that, and he says, this means nothing. What is the point of all of this? That same question would repeat itself at the very end of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12. He asks the same question. We have the same question. What is the point of this? Everything is just meaningless. Sounds very pessimistic, right? But Solomon is not a nihilist. He's not really saying that life doesn't have any value or purpose. We need to look at the word meaningless a little bit closer and understand it through three different kind of aspects. What Solomon is saying is that life is very confusing. It's baffling. We don't understand it. We don't get it. Life doesn't make sense sometimes, right? It's like those mornings where you get up, you rush, and you get to the car, hoping to get to work on time or to get to school on time, only to find yourself stuck in traffic. Have you ever had a moment like that? And when you kind of ask yourself, man, life doesn't make any sense. Like I fought and I scraped and I battled to get to the car on time, only to have this little fender bender and all these rubberneckers ruin my morning and make me late for work. Life can be confusing sometimes. And he's saying, as I look around, this life sometimes has no meaning. It doesn't make sense to me. It's very confusing. This word meaningless also could be translated to point of view. Again, this person is giving his experience, his observation from his point of view. And again, this is Solomon who had success. He had fame. He had fortune. He had power. He had relationships. But yet still inside, he's empty. It reminds me of the C.S. Lewis quote that says, if I find myself with desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. If I find myself with these desires that the things of this world can't really fill and make satisfied, then the only logical explanation is that I was created for another existence, for another world. Now, the third aspect is this word which means vapor. And I have this handy machine here. Some of you maybe thought I was sick this morning, but I'm not. Praise God. But this is a vaporizer. And the Hebrew word here is the word hebel, which literally means breath. And what Solomon is saying is he's saying, you know, oftentimes life is a breath. Take a deep breath right now. Take a deep breath in. Take a deep breath out. Solomon is saying that's your life. The brevity of it. It could be confusing. He's saying life is this vapor where you could see it here, but it just disappears. This must be meaningless. What is the point to this? Here's the problem that Solomon is trying to teach us. Here's the problem that he's bringing up. The problem is this, that the things of this earth are empty and fleeting. He's saying this is a problem with life, that if this life and what it gives is all we have, these things are empty, these things are fleeting. They're here one moment, they're gone the next moment. And any effort that you have to try to change this reality, any kind of plans that you have to kind of make this not true, that life is nothing but a vapor, that is vapor as well. It's futile. It's futile to think that life is nothing more than a breath, that it's here and then it's gone like that. And you trying to hold on to it, you trying to maximize it, you trying in your human strength to kind of grip onto it and make it your own, that is just as futile as me trying to grasp this vapor. I have nothing. It's hopeless. It's meaningless to chase after this and try to hold on to these things, because the life in this world and what it has to offer you is meaningless. This is the problem that he is positing for us here in this text. When you come to see this, can you understand now why Solomon is asking the question, what's the point of it then? What's the point of it? The book of Ecclesiastes causes us to wrestle with these truths across all the areas of your life. When you struggle, when you seem lost, when your faith seems low, when you seem anxious, when you are confused, this is the reality. This is the point of view. This is the confusion in Solomon's world when he says, this is all meaningless if this is all we have. Because in this life, everything is temporary. Everything is fleeting. Everything is empty. But there's a truth beyond the observation. There's a spiritual reality that Solomon has not grasped just yet. And that is that with God and through a life with Jesus, our life becomes one that is not empty, that is not fleeting, that is not meaningless. Jesus himself said in John 10:10 that the thief's purpose is to steal, to kill, and destroy. But Jesus came and his purpose is to give us what? A rich and satisfying life. Now, the rich does not mean their material possessions, but a fulfilling life, a satisfying life that's not meaningless. Solomon didn't know Jesus. We have the advantage of having the New Testament, of knowing that Jesus came and died on a cross and gave his life for us so that we might experience peace with God. And through the peace with God, we could experience the new life in God. And that new life with God is one of meaning and purpose. Solomon didn't know that, but we know that. But a life apart from Jesus, a life without Jesus, is nothing more than what? Vapor. It's vapor. It's meaningless. Solomon's trying to teach us that any earthly pursuit without eternal purposes is empty. Now, what is his proof for this? What was he seeing? What was he observing that made him think this way? Look at verse 4. Solomon says, generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south, then turns north, round and around it goes, blowing in circles.
rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full. Then the water returns to the rivers and flows out again to the sea. He's observing nature. He's observing the wind. He's observing the sun. He's observing the water. And his proof is this. As he looks at life, as he looks at his existence, his proof is that all things just seem to repeat themselves. That's his proof, that everything is just one big repetition. He's describing the cyclical pattern of life, that things just seem to repeat. He's saying the generations of people, they come and go. They come and they change, but there's no movement. There's no progress. Have you ever found yourself in places where you kind of say, there's a lot of movement, but there's no progress here? Have you ever seen summer construction in Chicago? A lot of movement, a lot of activity, no progress. As Solomon observes the world, he's kind of saying, you know, things just don't change. That's what makes things vapor, is that nothing seems to change. And as we all learned Monday night as we turned into the Bears game, this was every Bears fan again on Monday night, because they showed us that some things just don't change. This is Solomon here. He's saying, you know, I look around and the winds and the sun and the rivers and the days and the people, a lot of movement, a lot of activity, no achievement. No achievement. This is the proof that this whole thing is just meaningless. And listen, it could be us when you're stuck in the rat race of life, where it seems like your cycle is you wake up, you get on your commute, you go to work, you come home, you eat, you sleep, and you repeat the cycle. Going through that day in and day out can cause us to say, what's the point of this? This is what Solomon is going through. He's saying all this activity, all this movement, but no real achievement, no real purpose. It's a rinse, lather, repeat cycle. Look at the streaming platforms. The shows just kind of seem to repeat themselves. Law and Order, reality TV, romantic comedy, suspense movies, action, repeat. The news cycle, the echo chamber, these repetitive cycles cause us to long for something more. When everything just seems to repeat, when you ask yourself, what is the point? That is eternity bubbling up in your soul, saying there's got to be something more to this than just this repetitive cycle. And that's where we find Solomon. He's wanting to break free from the patterns that are not leading him anywhere good. And as you look at your life and as you examine your life, you need to find, what are those repetitive patterns that are leading you nowhere good? You know what those patterns are? They're this. Meaningless. They're the proof to Solomon's point to say life is fleeting, life is empty. Verse 8, he gets even darker in the hole. He says, everything is worrisome beyond description. And we could take that sentence and apply it to our nation, in our city, in our world right now, can't we? We could really apply that to our situation right now for many things that you see. He says, no matter how much we see, no matter how much we touch, I'm inserting that there, taste, feel. He says, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. So if the problem is that life is empty and meaningless, and the proof is that everything just seems to repeat, that causes the frustration. What is the frustration that Solomon is communicating to us right here, is that we have desires that are unfillable. We all have within us these desires that we're seeking to fill in our life. And honestly, we're looking to seek them and fulfill them in the wrong places. And as long as we go to those places to fill our needs and our desires will become unfillable. When you focus on the temporary things, you'll never be filled. Society, our economy, our culture is one now that is driven towards experiences. Have you noticed this? Everything's about experiences now. About 27 years ago, some very wise economists from the University of Harvard discovered that culture and society was moving more away from material possessions. It wasn't so much, hey, look at my great Lamborghini. People are still into that. Where they were saying the future is people desiring experiences. And that began to change even the way you eat dinner. Now, it wasn't just a good restaurant known for its good food. You began to see things like Rainforest Cafe, where now you had a meal, but there was volcanoes exploding and jungles, you know, animals around you, and there was gorillas chanting, and it became an experience. No longer was it just good food at a restaurant, but it was the Hard Rock Cafe. You could come and experience the history and the lore and the legacy of rock music during your dining experiences. And culture and the economy became more about what we could see and what we could touch and beyond what we could taste, and everything became experiences. The boom of the amusement parks and Disney based on experiences. Now there is the Van Gogh experience, there is the Frida experience, there is the Harry Potter experience, there is the Star Wars experience, there is the Stranger Things experience. Everything seems to be experience driven because people have these desires. They have their eyes and their ears and their hands and their mouths and their noses filled, their senses wanting to be filled. And thousands of years ago, you have this man who says, you could try to fill your soul with all of those experiences, but nothing will fill those because those experiences are still what? Vapors. Chasing vapors. My wife and I, a couple years ago, we went to see U2 in Las Vegas at the Sphere. The name of this venue is the Sphere Experience. Because they're billing it and they're selling it not only as a concert venue where you could go and see your favorite musicians play, but it is an immersive 360-degree sphere. You get it? Experience. And let me tell you something. On the inside of it, it was an experience. It was an amazing experience to be engulfed in the reality of this performance. But a couple days later, guess what? I had to go to work. The bills didn't stop coming. The challenges and the issues of life, my back pain didn't magically go away because I had this experience. It was great for the moment, but at the end of the day, it was nothing more than a vapor. If this was God's way for us to fill ourselves, our churches would be empty because you could just go there and fill your soul with what you need. But 3,000 years ago, this wise man said, these experiences, they are just vapors. It reminds me of what St. Augustine said. He said, "O Lord, you have made us for yourself. You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until our hearts rest in you." The only rest for your soul is not found in experiences. The rest for your soul is found in God and a relationship with Him, because our hearts were designed by Him. He has planted eternity into your heart. And when you find yourself struggling and battling and feeling like I'm experiencing all these experiences, yet God, I feel empty. I feel like something's missing. That is God trying to wake you up and say, find rest in Him. Find rest in Him. And that's what Solomon here is battling through. That is what he's fighting with. Verse 9. Solomon says, history just repeats itself. It has been all done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. He's saying, you know, there's nothing really new. Everything just repeats. Sometimes people say, here is something new. The iPhone 17, which just took the camera and stretched it sideways. But actually, it is old. It's an iPhone 16. Sorry to bust your bubble. It's an iPhone 16 with a sideways camera. But actually, it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past. And in future generations, no one will remember what we are doing now. Again, doesn't sound like words you would find in the Bible. This doesn't sound super encouraging or super helpful or super motivating, but here is the reality of someone who's asking themselves the hard questions because their heart that they have, a finite being bound by time and space, has a heart that has something infinite and divine planted within eternity. And he's struggling here and he's battling through the idea there's got to be something more because everything just seems to repeat itself. This is the repetition. The repetition aids the frustration that there's truly nothing new. Everything just seems to be repackaged. I work with young people, and I am blown away with half admiration and with half kind of shaking my head when young students come and ask me, teacher, have you ever heard of the band called the Rolling Stones? And I'm like, never. Are they new? Did they just come out? Tell me more about that. To them, it's a new discovery. It's new. It's alluring. It's new to them. But I see students with the shirts and with their logos and stickers on their computers and on their folders. And to me, with half admiration, because it says, hey, they have respect for the classics, right? But half kind of shaking my head like they think this is new. Nothing's new. Have you seen the fashion that the young people are wearing today? It's what we wore in the 90s, right? Nothing new under the sun. Hey, we have new technologies. We have new inventions, and we have all these new ways that really have been promoted to us as ways of trying to protect and to take this and to keep it here close to us. It's all this technology saying, you know, you could keep all this. You could bottle all this. You could make meaning out of all this, and you could keep it with you. And this technology, which also just comes and goes. Do you remember these brands? Show them the brands. These brands? In the not too distant past, a lot of you had these brands. You were the coolest person on the block with your BlackBerry phone. It was the original smartphone. You had your Palm Pilot where, ooh, let me pull out my little digital pen and I'll write your number here on my Palm Pilot. Many of you had many Blockbuster nights. And DVDs were the rage. I won't ask who had a MySpace profile, but I would imagine many people here did. But these things just come and go. Now it's Facebook. Now it's Instagram. Now it's Netflix. Now it's Apple. Now it's Sprint or Verizon. These are just rehashes. And this is what Solomon is saying. He's saying history just repeats itself. And there will come a time where nobody will remember these things. And in the future, there will come a time when no one will remember what we're doing either. This is a pretty pessimistic guy saying everything just repeats. There's nothing really new in the world. We need to be careful that we're not fooled by the novelty of things, but we choose to build our life on what's eternal, like God and his kingdom. What we can't do is that we can't get caught into the allure of things being new and things being the solution. The truth in this is that Solomon is saying for millennia, even back then, people tried the best to bottle this and to keep this and to guard this. But if you're trying to do that apart from God in your life, it's meaningless because at the end, what is it? It's vapor. It's here today, gone tomorrow. But when eternity is planted in your heart, you ask the question, what is the point of this? There's got to be something more to this. And here is the point. Here is the point. Ecclesiastes causes us to examine our life. This is Solomon begging you, look at how you live. Examine how you're using time. Examine what you put your life into. Because again, he's facing the reality that time is precious, and as finite beings bound by space and time, God has planted eternity in our heart as a way to connect with an eternal God who's infinite. But we must ask ourselves and we must discern how we're living and ask the questions, what are the hows and the whats of what I'm doing with my time? And listen, the advantage that we have, like I shared earlier, is that Solomon didn't know Jesus. But we have the advantage of the New Testament in that we have Jesus. And the New Testament would do well to educate and to inform and to inspire Solomon to say, people will remember. As a matter of fact, in church, once a month here, we do an act of remembrance. What is that act of remembrance that we do here? Communion. Do you know why we do communion? We do communion because it's commanded here, as in, found in 1 Corinthians, that when Jesus took the bread, he broke it in pieces and said, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And here, 2,000 years later, we do this in remembrance of Jesus. Why? Because a life with Jesus is not vapor. It's not brief. It's eternal. But we need to have that perspective. And this book of Ecclesiastes is a challenge. It's a nudge. It's a push to say, how are you living? And have you asked yourself the question, what is the point? Solomon suggests that no one will remember anything. Jesus clarifies that and says, no, people will remember me. It's when we remember that we stop the round and round. It's that when we remember Jesus, we stop trying to grasp and chase the vapor, and we find a life of meaning and purpose in him. And that is the hope. This is the hope that's found beyond the book of Ecclesiastes. This is the hope that God gives us, the life that we really crave. The life that we really crave is found in God. That is the hope that we have beyond. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We're going to jump all the way to the end of the book. It takes this brother 12 chapters, but he gets there. At the end of his ranting and his raving and his questioning and his wonderings and his doubts and his confusion, he says, that's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. This is what Solomon says. He says, fear God and obey his commands. For this is everyone's duty. Verse 14, God will judge us for everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. This is not a spoiler. This is not kind of like me revealing the end. This is just a preview. This teacher found his answer to the question, what is the point? What is the point? Live for God. And your life will have meaning. Your life will have purpose. It will no longer be meaningless. It will no longer be like a vapor in the wind, because your purpose is to know and to love God. That is what fills your life. So let me leave you with these three changes. What could we take from this message and apply to our life that would cause us to change something? Here it is. The first one is a head change, a change that we need to get into the way we think. What these verses teach us and what the book of Ecclesiastes teaches us is that to know that God has made you and he assigns you a purpose. This is a fundamental idea we must grasp, that we must believe and choose to stand on, that you are a person created in the imago Dei, in the image and likeness of God with value and worth, and you have a purpose that's been given to you by God. God has designed you that way, and God has implanted in your heart the idea of eternity, and that is what allows you to connect with him. It needs to begin up here. That leads to a change in the heart. Once you know that you've been made by God with purpose, you now begin to feel grateful that you can look to God for the answers of life when it feels pointless. When life feels pointless, you can look to God as the giver of life and the giver of purpose for the answers that you seek. That should cause a gratitude within your heart to say, God, I thank you that even though I'm confused, even though I don't know what the point is, God, I could rely on you and I could ask you to reveal to me what is the point. And you answer that question. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask God, and God will give liberally in abundance to them. That should be a sense of gratitude that you have a God who will reveal that to you. And because your head has changed, and because your heart has changed, now your hands should change. It should change the way you live. And now you are to purposely make God the highest priority in your life. If God is the one who's designed you for purpose, he needs to be the main priority in your life. Without doing that, you're chasing vapor. We're chasing something that cannot be grasped, that cannot be taken, that cannot be contained, that cannot be held onto, because it's empty. Without God in your life is empty. So make God the number one priority in your life.